Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
The Roberts Court's Christianity-favoring anti-abortion decisions
are among the reasons why our guest, Professor Steven Feldman, has written a book called
Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. Afghanistan's economy is imploding, with all but 3% of households expected to fall below the poverty line in coming months, the UN said on Thursday. To help ordinary Afghans, the UN Development Programme has announced the launch of a People's Economy Fund to provide desperately needed access to cash. The fund will tap into donations frozen since the Taliban takeover in August. Germany has already pledged $58 million of the more than $660 million required over the next 12 months, said Achim Steiner, UNDP administrator.
There are 38 million people who cannot be kept alive just from the outside. We have to step in, we have to stabilize a people's economy, and in addition to saving lives in the immediate, we also have to save livelihoods, because otherwise we will confront indeed a scenario through this winter and into next year where millions and millions of Afghans are simply unable to stay on the land, in their homes, in their villages, and survive.
New data analysed by the WHO has revealed that between 80,000 and 180,000 healthcare workers could have died from COVID-19 between January last year and May 2021. These estimates were calculated from the 3.45 million coronavirus-related deaths reported globally to the UN Health Agency as of May this year, a figure that WHO said may well be at least 60% lower than the actual number of victims. The development comes as the UN Health Agency warned that the pandemic will go on a year longer than it needs to because poorer countries have not received the vaccines they should have. Barely 1 in 20 people in Africa have been vaccinated, compared with around 4 in 10 globally. In a call for concrete action to better protect health and care workers worldwide from COVID-19 and other infections, WHO and partner organizations expressed concern at the large number of health and care workers who have died from the virus, but also that an increasing proportion is suffering from burnout, stress, anxiety, and fatigue. The UN has announced sweeping initiatives to strengthen the gathering of data which is needed for accurate weather and climate forecasting to protect vulnerable communities around the globe. Announcing the news on Thursday, the World Meteorological Organization said that all 193 member states had approved the sharing of vital observations in the face of climate change and increasing extreme weather events. The agency has unveiled three new protocols to boost information sharing, which will help to fill data gaps in some regions, and at the same time try to meet huge demand for weather and climate data products and services. Welcoming the development, WMO's Secretary General Petteri Tallas said that the growing vulnerability of people living in high-risk areas and concerns about issues such as food security are contributing to a huge increase in demand for information about weather, climate and water and their impacts. Katie Dartford, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves, or so I've been called on occasions. This is the October 21st, 2021 edition of Free Thought Radio, Once again, Grant Blaschka of Audio for the Arts is our engineer today in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall. That's the national office of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and we're a national association, the largest such association of non-believers, freethinkers, atheists, and agnostics in North America with over 36,000 members. And if you're not a member, we would love to send you material or have you join us. You can find out more at ffrf.org. We work to keep religion out of government and out of our social policy, and boy, is that ever needed. We need reason and science to prevail.
And we also work to educate the public about the views of atheists, agnostics, freethinkers, non-believers. And a lot of people don't know that many composers were non-religious. The music you're going to hear between segments today is by the French composer Georges Bizet. It's the anniversary of his birthday this week. Bizet was born October 25th, 1838, and Bizet was not religious. He was a rationalist who said, "Religion is a means of exploitation employed by the strong against the weak. Religion is a cloak of ambition, injustice, and vice." Listen for some of Bizet's music today, including Torero, Habanera, and Danse Bohème from the opera Carmen.
Should the Supreme Court be reformed? In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk with Professor Stephen Feldman about his new book, Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion. Very nice words to us to hear.
And that title has an exclamation point, Pack the Court, exclamation point. Professor Feldman argues that the only way to stop the radical politicization of the current conservative justices, including the threat to state-church separation, is to increase their number with more progressive thinkers who are in tune with the changes that are happening in our country.
On our TV show this week, Free Thought Matters, our guest is Steven Pinker. We talked about his new book, just hot off the press, Rationality, What It Is, Why It Seems Scarce, Why It Matters.
During the interview, Steven Pinker, who is the chair of FFRF's honorary board, talked about logic, reason, probability, and common fallacies. He also talked about religion.
The topic of rationality did make me think anew about religion. For millions of people, their religious beliefs kind of exist in a funny kind of space. They profess them, they say they believe them, but you wonder how deep the belief is. But of course, in some people, it actually crosses over into literal belief about reality. I differentiate between two kinds of beliefs, reality beliefs and mythology beliefs. And the real problem is when a sacred value kind of leaks from the mythology zone into the reality zone.
That's Steven Pinker. You can see that entire Free Thought Matters interview with Steven Pinker this Sunday on broadcast TV. Free Thought Matters airs in Chicago, Denver, Houston, Los Angeles, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and in San Francisco.
So for stations and times, you can check ffrf.org/news. There's a drop-down. Look for Free Thought Matters. You can also watch that new episode. We put them up every Thursday when we announce it on Free Thought Radio. It's on FFRF's YouTube channel. You can just look for the playlist Free Thought Matters, and you can catch all the other shows that way too. And speaking of Steven Pinker, this is a reminder that he'll be speaking at FFRF's in-person convention in Boston next month, where he's going to tell us a lot more about his new book, Rationality. And of course, he also is the author of Enlightenment Now, How Reason, Science, Progress Are Improving the World. It's a paraphrase of
And of course,
subtitle.
Many, many other books as well.
Many, many other bestsellers in science. And he is being joined by a whole boatload of fantastic authors and activists, including Margaret Atwood. And by the way, we still have room for the reception, which costs more money, if you want a chance to get a picture with her, maybe masked.
We have Gloria Steinem. We have Catherine Stewart, author of The Power Worshippers, who will be actually doing a conversation with Margaret Atwood. Linda Greenhouse, who is the wonderful reporter of the Supreme Court and has a new book that will be coming out in November, so we'll be some of the first to have it, on what happened with Amy Coney Barrett when Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. And she also covers abortion so wonderfully, the constitutional issues. And there's a whole host of activists, authors, the founder of Hispanic American Freethinkers, David Tamayo, Sikivu Hutchinson, the founders of Black Skeptics Los Angeles.
An actor from India,
Sushant Singh. We have students will be presenting their award-winning essays from our BIPOC students, Black, Indigenous, students of color. We'll have the four top winners. It'll be a very diverse program, Freethinkers of the Year. I'm missing lots of people. But we'll also do reports on FFRS legal activism and our activism throughout the year. So it'll be a chance to mingle.
Is there a deadline?
The deadline to register is October 31st at our website. You can show up at the door. You won't be able to order any rooms after October 31st. So we encourage you to plan ahead. We will undoubtedly be masked, we expect, but that's a small price to pay for peace of mind and keeping our very important speakers, especially octogenarians like Atwood and Gloria Steinem, who are national treasures or North American treasures, safe. So please sign up now. The rooms, you may be on your own because, as we announced earlier, those reservations were due on Monday.
You can sign up at
probably get some.
ffrf.org/convention-21. You can go there to
sign up. 2021. And you can go to the events link, it's events and outreach link on our website to find all that convention information and the registration.
So we have a lot of news to talk about today. Before we talk about some FFRF news, I just want to talk about a very sad story that happened earlier this month that shows the dangers of religion. An Arizona mother was arrested after the police say she shot her two children multiple times. She killed her daughter, and she severely injured her six-year-old son. And the mother said the reason she did that was because she wanted her children to go to heaven. So she's been arrested. She was suffering from depression, and she was on prescription drugs. She even tried to kill herself at the time, but she believed that life would be better for her kids if they were out of this world and into a new world. So her bail is set at $2 million, and the boy is in critical condition. The two-year-old girl died immediately. Aww. It's just really a sad.
Well, that shows that, you know, we think of hell as being such a pernicious doctrine, but the belief in heaven can create so much violence. We have only to look at 9/11.
Yeah.
But so many individual tragedies like this by people who've been indoctrinated to think there's a better world out there.
Wow.
Yeah. Very sad.
So on to FFRF news. Another baptism story. We told you last week about a baptism. Was it Texas or Tennessee where the coach was praying with the students? Well, in Louisiana, FFRF is complaining strongly about a recent baptism of football players at a Louisiana public high school. Earlier this month, a coach organized a team baptism, including many student players, at Richwood High School. And then after this baptism, you can see pictures online of them sitting in this water. It looks like a little kiddie swimming pool. And then they were boasting, "Praise Jesus, he's awesome." Player after player surrendered to Christ and followed through with baptism. 10 guys surrendered to follow Jesus. Well, we pointed out that this is a public high school coach, and that is unconstitutional. The courts have said that public school coaches cannot participate in their team's religious activities. If the students really wanted to do that, that's their thing, but the coaches cannot do that.
They shouldn't be doing it on school property.
Exactly, and of course, they shouldn't
they
even
go
be
to a church
endorsing it. So this activity must stop.
So then there's an awful lot of national developments that we want to make a comment on and that FFRF, in fact, has made public statements on. And we did have to write a letter on Monday. It got out first thing that we got news of this about Virginia churches that must be stopped from politicking during the current state governor campaign. And we wrote the IRS first about the fact that several Virginia churches in the Norfolk area engaged in illegal political campaigning on Sunday. They had voting rights activists, the wonderful voting rights activist, Stacey Abrams, and she gave speeches about voting, but then she told them who to vote for, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Terry McAuliffe, and that's a no-no. And she was quoted as saying, voting is an act of faith. I need you to do the job. Now, she can say all that, but she shouldn't be saying it as part of a church function that involves illegal partisan politicking by a tax-exempt entity. So we reported those churches to the IRS, and then there's news that there's going to be a planned ad campaign featuring Vice President Kamala Harris broadcast in over 300 black churches across Virginia as part of their morning worship services in the coming weeks. And in that video, she tells people to vote for Terry McAuliffe and vote today after today's service, knowing that this is for
worship service.
Now, yeah. If this is the Trump administration and Pence recording a commercial like this, I think everybody would be up in arms. We're a nonpartisan group. This is inappropriate by any political party for any reason, no matter how good they think it is. It's pernicious, and it's almost unbelievable that the vice president would not understand that she was violating the Johnson Amendment, the Johnson Amendment that has been so viciously attacked by Trump. And, you know, it's really a brazen violation, as we told the IRS, of regulations, and it requires immediate action. So this is not acceptable, and we'll have to see what happens.
There's other ways to reach out to black
there
and minority communities.
And then, of course, we are still looking at the ongoing crisis in Texas because of the ban on abortion. And there was a final ruling by a panel of federal appellate judges late last week that SB 8, the Texas abortion ban, must be enforced while the constitutionality is being determined by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most conservative appellate court in the nation. And I'm sure you've read that Merrick Garland, the Attorney General, has asked the Supreme Court to take this right away. We're waiting to hear. And again, I would point out that if Merrick Garland had been appointed to the Supreme Court, if they had held nominating hearings, if that hadn't been delayed, that hadn't been halted by Mitch McConnell, he'd be on the court now and we wouldn't be looking at what's happening in Texas. This ban would not have been upheld by the Supreme Court. They would have taken action. So here he is as Attorney General, at least trying to do the right thing. But it's a very ominous situation.
And again, we have to point out that this is really a religiously motivated ban.
Entirely religiously motivated. And we did point that out in our amicus brief in the Dobbs case that's going to be heard December 1st by the Supreme Court, which is about the ban at 15 weeks in Mississippi. Yeah. But there's a possibility that this case, the ban that on basically all abortions in Texas, may go up. And speaking of abortion rights, FFRF did join 117 organizations that wrote a letter to public officials and policymakers asking to end the unjust stigma associated with abortion and using the very word abortion. And so that we shouldn't see legislators afraid to use that word. And we have a press release about that that you can read at our website. And finally, and most timely, we were most disappointed at the preliminary results of the Biden Commission that was tasked with looking at ways to expand the U.S. Supreme Court. And late last week, they did issue their preliminary findings. There's going to be a final, some kind of final announcement in November. And they it was tepid, it was cowardly, they had a very puzzling, exaggerated concern that if we add 4 seats or even 2 seats to the court to make up for the stolen seats, the seats stolen by McConnell concerning Merrick Garland and after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, that somehow we would end up with 93 or something like that. It was just ridiculous. So they missed an opportunity to promote an independent judiciary. And at FFRF, we've endorsed expansion of the entire federal judiciary, and it shouldn't even be controversial at the lower levels because they're so grossly understaffed. So we are going to be talking about that whole issue, pack the court. with the author and our guest who's coming up.
In the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Professor Stephen Feldman, who is the author of the new book, Pack the Court. And before that, after this break, we're going to have a sneak preview of this year's Secular Day of the Dead celebration. Plus, we'll hear a little hominy about what freethinkers think about death. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio in just a minute.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at ffrf.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are the co-presidents of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This week on FFRF's Ask an Atheist show on Facebook Live, it's a video program every Wednesdays at noon central, we talked with Margaret Downey and Victoria De La Torre of the Free Thought Society about the upcoming Secular Day of the Dead celebration that the Freedom From Religion Foundation is one of eight groups co-sponsoring.
And that's a secular version of the Mexican Day of the Dead. And during the show, I asked Victoria, who's in San Diego, why the need for a secular Day of the Dead celebration?
Well, Dan, I think this fills the needs for a lot of people. The Secular Day of the Dead is really just a celebration about life, not just death. And I think for a lot of Hispanic communities, there are so many celebrations and traditions that unfortunately we feel as though we don't take part of sometimes because they're so religious and it's tied in so much with our culture. However, for the Secular Day of the Dead, we've found a way to connect those important traditions to people who kind of need that in the Hispanic community.
And actually this event is open to everybody. Whether you have Hispanic heritage or not, you can participate in the Secular Day of the Dead. How do you say that in Spanish, Dan?
El Día Secular de los Muertos.
By registering at the Free Thought Society webpage, that's ftsociety.org. Scroll down to events and click on the Secular Day of the Dead, and you can participate in it if there's somebody in your life that you want to memorialize.
And some very famous people, actors, actresses, and musicians will be participating.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Julia Sweeney, who's going to interview actor John Huertos.
And then
that's going to be fun.
And then John Davidson.
And Dan Davidson. And then we're there, and the other co-sponsors, CFI and so on. You can watch that entire Ask an Atheist show on FFRS YouTube channel and look for the Ask an Atheist playlist. And you can also tune in next week live to the event. It's set Wednesday Central on FFRS Facebook page, and you can make comments or ask questions during the show.
Wednesday at noon Central. So speaking of the Day of the Dead, we're all going to die one day. The Humanist UK produced a video about how non-believers approach the topic of death. This video was written by Humanist UK President Andrew Copson, and it was read by the British actor, director, and author Stephen Fry.
What should we think about death? One thing we can be sure of is that we will die. Everybody will. Some people do not like the thought of this and don't accept it. They prefer to think that death is not the end of us, but that we might live on, perhaps in another life on earth, or in another place where people are rewarded or punished. But wanting something to be true is not the same as it being true. And there is no evidence to support the idea that our minds could survive the end of our bodies. What sense could we make of the things that we value? Love, experience, communication, achievements, the warmth of the sun on our face, if we were disembodied? And if life were eternal, wouldn't it lose much of what gives it shape, structure, meaning, and purpose? Think about reading a good book or eating a delicious cake. These may be great pleasures, but one of the things that makes them pleasures is that they come to an end. A book that went on and on forever, and a cake that you never stopped eating, would both soon lose their appeal. Death is a natural part of life. It makes sense for us to try not to be afraid of this, but instead to come to terms with it. Then we can focus on finding meaning and purpose in the here and now, making the most of the one life we know we have and helping others to do the same, choosing good over evil without the expectation of reward in some other place. When we do die, we will live on in the work we have done and in the memories of the other people whose lives we have been part of. Our bodies will break up and become part again of the cycle of nature. The atoms that form us now will go on to form other things, trees and birds, flowers and butterflies.
Well, that would be nice to come back as a butterfly, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't think they're saying you're really going to.
No, but your atoms, of course, yeah. The stuff in our body is just stuff. There's nothing supernatural about it. We are natural animals.
That reminds me of the quote by Mirabel Lesueur, who was, she was banned during the McCarthy era and was quite a chronicler of the people. And I interviewed her once, and she told me the bees and the butterflies survived, but not the dinosaurs. Only she pronounced it dinosaurs. It was very cute. She had known Emma Goldman. She knew everybody. But then I've thought about that quote often. And with climate change, will the butterflies survive? Will anything survive? They are, many of them, very endangered, the monarchs. So,
well, they have adapted over millions of years.
Yeah, but humankind is wreaking a lot of havoc on the planet. And yeah. There's going to be the climate change summit in Glasgow. We must all do our part there so that the butterflies really do survive.
A comedian once said, "I don't believe in eternal life, but just in case, I'm taking a change of underwear." So we're going to take a break. And after the break, we're going to talk with Stephen Feldman. He's the author of the book, Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion. What do you think? Should we expand the court? Are there other types of court reform that would make more sense? We're going to talk with Professor Stephen Feldman about that. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And Bizet is leading us out here with a little bit of Torero from Carmen. We'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, "No gods, no masters." This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. We've had a number of Stevens on our show today. Stephen Pinker, Stephen Fry, and now Stephen Feldman. Stephen M. Feldman is the Jerry W. Housel Carl F. Arnold Distinguished Professor of Law and Adjunct Professor of Political Science at the University of Wyoming. He's authored a number of books, including The New Roberts Court, Donald Trump and Our Failing Constitution, Free Expressions and Democracy in America, A History, Please Don't Wish Me a Merry Christmas, A Critical History of the Separation of Church and State.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen those other books, so I'm looking forward to reading those. So Stephen Feldman's newest book is Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion. And Pack the Court, as Dan previously noted, has an exclamation. He argues that the Roberts Court is a serious threat to equality, fairness, and the rights of women, LGBTQ individuals, and non-Christians. We're very happy to have you on the phone with us, Professor Feldman from Denver. Welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and I was so excited when I saw an ad for your book in The Nation this fall. It's, I think, a very new book. And this is a very hot topic for us at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And first, why pack, quote unquote, the court? What's wrong?
So, particularly at this time, the Roberts Court, just focusing on the Roberts Court itself, the Roberts Court is extremely conservative in its decisions, and you mentioned several different types of decisions in the introduction. Second, the Roberts Court conservative alignment, and there's a current 6-3 split on the court with six conservatives and three progressives. That conservative alignment does not match popular votes in presidential elections over the last several decades, really. Third, while the Democrats have this brief opportunity where they control both houses of Congress and the presidency, all they need to do to expand the court is to pass a statute. And of course, the filibuster is a problem, and Senator Manchin would be a problem, or Senator Sinema would be a problem if they're trying to change filibuster. But there's no difference in terms of the problems in passing a statute, expanding the court. There's no difference between that and let's say passing a voting rights statute or an infrastructure bill. If they can get the votes of all the Democrats, they could just pass a statute and expand the court. There's really no constitutional barrier to simply adding justices to the court. And the court size has been changed numerous times in throughout history. It's not like it's locked in at nine.
That's right. Now, Chapter 7 of your book, you really do go into the harm of the Roberts Court, the denigration of democratic government, judicial protection of wealth and the economic marketplace, lack of judicial protection for women and abortion, protection for whites, not people of color, and you mentioned judicial protection of Christianity. And I'll go into also some of the very bad cases, that do affect the separation of church and state and this favoritism really for Christianity, like Greece versus Galloway, the Lemon Test, the dismissal, the Lemon Test, the Bladensburg Cross case, Masterpiece Cake Shop, Espinoza was the voucher case. So, of course, these are of great interest to us at the Freedom From Religion Foundation in our work. And we don't see how we can maintain an Establishment Clause and Roe versus Wade right now with the current composition of the court. So we're all with you. But there's so much, so many people who are afraid of this, and really the heart of it, their fear, seems to be what you talk about in your book, which is you say is a myth, that law and politics have to be separate and independent.
Is that a myth?
You're asking me.
Yes.
Yes, it is a myth, and it's a myth on multiple grounds. First of all, as I already mentioned, Congress has changed the size of the court multiple times throughout American history, and oftentimes those changes in the size of the court have been for political reasons. You can just focus, for instance, on the decade of the 1860s, where the Congress, and obviously that was a volatile decade politically, right? Civil War, Reconstruction. They changed the size of the court from 9 to 7 to 10 to 9 all during that decade. because of political maneuvering. Second, in terms of the nomination and confirmation process, so the president nominating potential justices, and then the Senate either confirming or rejecting those nominees. That's always been political. You know, there's sometimes this perception that the Democrats ruined the confirmation process. They politicized it when they rejected Robert Bork back in the 1980s. But that's just untrue. If you look at history, one-fourth of the nominees, or approximately one-fourth of the nominees, have been rejected by Congress, and also often for political reasons, going all the way back to George Washington's administration. His nominee for Chief Justice in 1795 was rejected on political grounds because many senators did not like the way he had supported the Jay Treaty, which was a treaty involving disputes with England and France. And then finally, in terms of the court's actual decision-making process, it's always in part political. Basically, it's a matter of how interpretation, especially constitutional interpretation, works, right? Interpretation is never like an arithmetic problem. It's never 2 plus 2 equals 4, where there's a clear, plain answer. Interpretation, particularly of the Constitution, is always in part political. So you can take a clause in the Constitution, like the Establishment Clause or the Free Exercise Clause, and in any particular case, you ask a conservative justice like Justice Alito to interpret that clause, and you ask a progressive justice, let's say Sotomayor, to interpret the same language, right? And it's only a few words, and they will reach opposite conclusions. And it's not because one of them is lying or is being disingenuous or, you know, is somehow too dense to understand the text of the Constitution. It's because they bring their political, cultural, religious backgrounds to their interpretation of the particular textual language. So I call this politics writ small. So if you think of somebody, a legislator, like a member of Congress, arguing to pass a statute, that's politics writ large, right? They're openly and overtly pursuing a political goal. With Supreme Court justices, they, at least in most cases, I think, not always, but at least in most cases, they sincerely try to interpret the legal text as best as possible. But in interpreting the text, their politics, or politics writ small, influences or shapes their understanding of the text. So politics is always part of the Supreme Court, both in its makeup and, very importantly, in its decision-making process.
So what you seem to be saying here is that since, if it is true, and I think it is from your argument, that the court is political or politicized, in spite of our sort of abstract reasoning that it's just this blind justice, if that's true and that's the fact of reality, then we should play the politics. We should, those of us who care about progressive values and the majority of the country who disagrees with the politics of the Supreme Court, we should play that game and we should pack the courts. Is that what you're saying in your book?
Yeah, yes, exactly. The final chapter in the book addresses the question of you know, would expanding the court, packing the court, would it damage the public's perception of the court, what we might call the sociological legitimacy of the court, right? Well, people think the court's no longer legitimate. So even if it's, you know, if my argument is correct, and obviously I think it is, that politics is always part of the court's decision-making process, and it's always been part of the court's makeup. If the public, doesn't understand that for some reason, and they think the legitimacy of the court is based on the court deciding in accordance with pure law where politics has no influence, then the argument is, well, wouldn't expanding the court undermine the public's acceptance or faith in the court? The fact is, political science research suggests that's not true, expanding the court is not likely to undermine the public's acceptance.
And if I may say so, the public's acceptance is already undermined by their decisions with a low approval rating this fall of 40%. So,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Now, we have to take a break. We are talking with Professor Feldman about his new book, Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion. When we come back from the break, Professor Feldman, I'd like to ask you, will Biden support court packing? And to comment on the preliminary findings by the commission that he appointed.
Sure.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back to speak with Professor Feldman about his book, Pack the Court, after this break.
Garofalo, are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker. We're continuing our conversation with Stephen M. Feldman, a law professor whose new book is called Pack the Court.
So, Professor Feldman, your book, by the way, published by Temple University Press, came out this year, but obviously before the Biden Commission on what to do about the Supreme Court issued its preliminary results about a week ago, which were more than disappointing to us. And they have final recommendations coming sometime next month. But I wonder if you could briefly tell us what your reaction was to their lack of interest in correcting the court.
Well, on the one hand, I was disappointed in the information I saw, I only saw the preliminary results as you were referring to them as what was reported in the newspapers. And my understanding is they are showing or have shown no interest in expanding the court. From what I saw, the one possible change that they were at least, suggesting might be something worth considering. I don't think they were even recommending it. I think they were saying here's a possibility, would be term limits. And in particular, the recommendation I've seen most often, and this is what I saw the commission apparently was discussing, would be 18-year term. So in other words, each Supreme Court justice would remain on the court for 18 years. Now, I mentioned several different alternatives to court expansion or court packing in my book, and I suggest that court packing is really the best approach to change the court as it's currently constituted. One reason for that, and this holds true for term limits, and from my understanding, the Presidential Commission acknowledged this point, is that establishing term limits might be unconstitutional. And the way the report I saw on from the commission was, they said they disagreed. Members of the commission disagreed on whether they could accomplish term limits by statute or whether it would require a constitutional amendment.
Well, my reading of that would be that it would require a constitutional amendment, because doesn't the Constitution refer to these as lifetime appointments or some similar language?
Mm-hmm.
So this is I was glad to see Lawrence Tribe really make a strong dissent regarding the commission's findings, that this was, of course, they weren't really even asked by Biden to make recommendations. It kind of seemed like, they say this, appoint a commission, that's where good ideas go to die. He wasn't really ready to deal with it. How do you think we can, they're losing opportunity here. How can we persuade people that this is in the nation's best interest?
Well, persuade Biden, really. How can we persuade?
Or others, that this is in the nation's best interest to keep our republic, to keep individual liberties. There's been so much at stake.
I agree, and to me it's obvious that we need a transformation of the court, a change in the makeup of the court through court expansion. But I study the Supreme Court and its constitutional decisions in particular, and I'm fully aware of the effects of the court's decisions. I am concerned that if somebody's not at that stage right now, and I'm not the only person who thinks Supreme Court expansion is necessary, but if somebody's not at that point right now, I'm worried that what's going to bring them to that point would be some additional Roberts Court decisions that are particularly politically salient. So, for example, the Democrats were able to push through some new voting rights legislation, right, which I think is absolutely essential, right, to protect the integrity of democracy. There's a very, very strong chance that the Roberts Court, as currently constituted, will strike down that voting rights legislation as being unconstitutional. And then it might get through to those who oppose court packing, saying, well, maybe it's too extreme. So I think that's sort of President Biden's perspective. I don't think he's a particularly big fan of the Roberts Court, but I think he doesn't want to mess with the institution of the Supreme Court, right? And, if he realizes that this court is going to basically construct constitutional barriers to just about everything that progressives and Democrats might support, he might realize then that, maybe we do need to do something about the Supreme Court. That's basically what happened in the 1930s, right, with Franklin Roosevelt.
Well, so we only have a couple minutes left, but that brings up what people's greatest objections are to this idea of expanding and correcting the Supreme Court, which is, if the Democrats do this now, then the Republicans will want to do it, and before you know it, we'll have 69 members of the Supreme Court, which is actually what the commission said, which seems so ridiculously exaggerated. But so, Professor Feldman, where would you draw the line? How do we stop that from happening?
Well, I think it has to do with democracy, right? The only way that either the Democrats or the Republicans are going to be able to expand the court is if that one party has complete control over branches of the national government, meaning the presidency and both houses of Congress. Then they could pass a statute despite opposition from the other party. And I think based on the popular vote for presidency, right, the Democrats have actually won 7 out of the last 8 popular votes for the presidency, if there were protections for voting, right, let's say the Democrats pass voting rights legislation so that elections more realistically reflected the will of a majority of American voters, then I don't think the Republican Party, as it's currently constituted, would be able to capture the presidency, the House, and the Senate, where they would then, expand the court and add more conservatives, right? The Republican Party, as it's currently constituted, would not be able to gather the votes to completely control the national government.
Well, we're out of time, Professor Feldman. I'm sorry. Thank you so much for explaining. People want to know more. They can look at your book, Pack the Court, A Defense of Supreme Court Expansion.
And we should point out that FFRF is a nonpartisan group, all hypothetical.
Well, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate having the opportunity.
And that's our show. We also want to thank you listeners for tuning in today in Philadelphia to WOOM, in Madison, Wisconsin to WIDE and WMUU, WADR Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, KEOS in College Station, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, WOOL, Black Sheep Radio in Bellows Falls, Vermont, WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. And, of course, if you're listening on the podcast, please give us a thumbs up on the provider that you're using and tell your friends and relatives to find out more about Free Thought Radio at ffrf.org/radio.
You can ask for more information at ffrf.org or just join us. You'll be supporting not only our radio, but all of our important work to keep religion out of government, our litigation, and our educational efforts. Tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday